The Diary of a CTO podcast. Sharing the secrets of successful CTOs. Brought to you by Trumor, the home of technology recruitment. Hosted by Guy Bevington.
Okay, so Martin, howdy. Cheers.
Cheers, Guy. Nice to be
Welcome,
here.
Welcome, buddy. And you're head of engineering for Sisive. Sisive being a technology platform that allows pharmaceutical and medical device companies to collect and manage safety and efficacy studies in the real world.
That's right.
Beautiful. That's what we do. Good stuff. And I guess we've spoken a little bit in the past about, through our various dealings, about leadership and what it is to be a good leader. And I think we both agreed that emotional intelligence plays quite a large part in leadership in the world that we live in today. And so we thought today it'd be great just to delve down a little bit further into that topic and hear more about your specific approach as a leader and how you run things within your team. But before we do, let's start a little bit with you, learning a little bit more about your background and your journey in tech to date. So yeah, if you'd be so kind, it would be great to hear a little bit more about your journey.
Yeah, it'd be great to share a little bit. So I started off as a software engineer, like many managers, and gradually moved towards the pathway where I wanted a bit of a change. I was enjoying doing tech still, but there were new developers coming in who were probably much better than me, and I found I was doing more and more of the support side of things, mentoring and enabling other people, and I could just leave them to be blazing a trail on the tech. I didn't get the same enjoyment as I used to do about learning lots of new tech all the time. I enjoy playing with tech, I enjoy the new things coming in, but I didn't want to deep dive into it like I used to, so just didn't get the same reward out of it after a while. But I really got a buzz out of helping other people get their start in their career, to help them come on and learn some of the things I've learned. So, yeah, probably not atypical to a lot of people. It's, you know, a very familiar story. But yeah, look for opportunities then to get into the leadership side of things. So I got the bug.
Fair enough. Good to hear. So what do you feel are the qualities of a good leader? If you had to kind of pick two or three of the most favourable qualities.
I think empathy is a big thing. Being able to put yourself in the shoes of the people who are doing the work, to put yourself in the shoes of the people who are using your software as well, the two sides of things, and then try and meet in the middle. You know, both are equally as important.
Yeah.
If you've got a team who aren't engaged with the customer, then it's not going to work. If you don't know what you're going after, you might have really good product people, really good delivery people around you to support, but I think it's really important that the people engineering the software understand why they're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they'll make better decisions, they'll make safer decisions for people, and you'll ultimately get better software at the other end.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you go about that as a leader, sort of helping your team understand what they're doing in and what it actually means to the end user in the real world? Are there any particular tactics that you use to demonstrate that?
A lot of it is trying to involve them early in strategy. It's not always doable. Sometimes you have to keep things back. There's either too much noise there with conversations. You don't want to worry people about things that are still in discussion. But where I can, I try and give them a taste of where we're trying to go as a business, that direction. So, you know, can I give them a little bit, even if I can't tell them all of the full story? So it's just trying to... A lot of the frustrations I've had as an engineer before, I've tried to address those with the people I work with, and I listen to other things they've got as well. So a lot of it is listening to what they've got, what's holding them up, what do they think is blocking them, sharing what I think is blocking them as well, and then trying to work through those.
Yeah.
Trying to get them to understand the journeys that the customers are on.
Yeah.
So obviously I've got to understand those first as well. So I do a lot of listening from customers, from the people I work with who understand the domains often better than I do. I've not been the specialist in a particular domain. I've worked around different things. I tend to move around and have specialized in technologies, in processes, in ways of working, but the domains have always been new. So that makes you a great listener. You have to be, otherwise you can't come in to keep swapping domains like that.
So
that's what I try and draw on. I try and use those skills, and I try and share those with the people I work with to try and help them get those as well.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. And I think listening is a really underrated quality in managers and leaders. You know, very often people take that stance of, as a leader, you know, that sort of dictatorial, do as I say, you know, type thing. And I think that you got, I think my mum always said, you've got two ears and one mouth, and use them in that ratio, and it'll save you well in life. And I genuinely believe that's very true.
It's a trap I can fall into very often as well. The other thing I'd say that ties into that helps is, I try and be vulnerable. And I don't mean I'm going to weep in front of everybody. What I mean by that is, if there's something I don't know, I'll tell people I don't know.
Yeah.
Or I say, look, I've got a really big concern here that we can't answer this for the business.
Yeah.
Or Dom, our CEO, needs this.
Mm.
You know, we really need this now. Yeah. I don't know how to answer it.
Yeah.
So I don't mind looking foolish, or I don't mind looking like I don't know things. It's really quite important that I do that, because if I can do that, that hopefully tells them they can do the same.
Absolutely.
I think the third thing that I've got with this is engineer experience, and I think more widely probably employee experience.
Okay.
So if we can start anything we do thinking about the experience of the employees, about how they can deliver it, we can ultimately think about what's best for the business. Tends to be that most of the concerns of any employee is a communication problem, or it's an efficiency problem, or both, you know, quite often both. And, you know, a lot of those frustrations about the way they do their job are also a big cost to the business.
Yeah.
If I've got a frustration that I'm doing some very busy work, you know, say it's, you know, if I'm doing busy work, that's probably going to be a big frustration to me.
Yeah.
So that's going to be high on my list of things that I don't think is a valid task for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not being put to good use. I'm not having to think about the work I'm doing, which means it's also very wasteful. That could be something that we automate. That could be something that we can remove from our process. That could be something that we put systems in to take, or it's perhaps something that involves a lot of communication between customers or different teams. And maybe we could give a different person the ability to do that work.
Mm.
Maybe that would save all those long chains that we've got.
Yeah.
So trying to make things more efficient, shortening the chains, shortening the feedback loops as well, to whether something's been done well.
Yeah.
All of those things I tend to find come from employee experience. So employee experience, talking to them what they need to do their job. Mm. We can build internal systems that are good. Engineer experience specifically, how can I help them to do their, to get code onto production as quick as possible?
Yeah.
A lot of that comes from those conversations.
Nice. I think the sort of core thread, though, as you're talking there throughout all those three things, is, you strike me as something that's very kind of self-aware of, you know, what you obviously what you don't know. And I totally agree with you, by the way. I think the vulnerability thing is huge. I think in this day and age, a lot of people relate more to people that don't claim to have all the answers, because, you know, most people obviously don't at the end of the day. How can you have? And I think often as a leader, you know, we have this false belief, really, that we need to be that person that's, you know, constantly confident all the time and has the right answer all the time. And it's quite empowering, I think, quite freeing as a leader when you can admit you sometimes don't. But I also think, let's say, for the culture of the team, very often it allows others to feel that they can be a lot more genuine and authentic themselves. So going back to that self-awareness piece that I spoke about there, is that something that's always come quite naturally to you? Have you had to work at that? Have you kind of done any sort of formal study, I guess, in the world of leadership?
No, very much learned through probably being very bad at it at first and getting a lot of feedback. And I think all of those three form a little bit of a virtuous circle as you go through. You know, if you can be vulnerable, people can tell you, then they'll feel comfortable telling you when you're wrong.
Mm.
So when you aren't listening enough, when you are making assumptions, when you are being, as you said, you know, a closed off leader who's just keeping things in private, or just going ahead and saying, yeah, we need to do that without consulting your team.
Mm.
Those are things that people feel they can come to you about and talk about and probably improve. You know, they know you don't think you're perfect.
Yeah.
And that's a big piece. It's not just about knowing you're approachable, but they also know your ego isn't too important for you.
Yeah.
That you can't take criticism.
Yeah.
People are very worried about damaging somebody else's ego at work.
Mm.
You know, and it's it can have, you know, consequences for them. And that can be, you know, if people will take things personally, you're worried about that, right? You need to build those relationships first.
Yeah.
If you can speed run that and shortcut that process that they can feel comfortable sharing when you've done something wrong,
yeah,
they can hopefully do the same back. But they can also tell you when you are wrong. And which is a great thing for you learning as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Do you feel that changes from people you're dealing with in terms of levels of seniority? So do you kind of feel that you're the same with board level senior stakeholders as you are in terms of the way you would engage with sort of more junior people and manage them?
I try to be, but it is different. Every circle you're in,
yeah,
is different, and you have to build that. And there will be people you're in a conversation with that find that very unnerving. That honesty,
yeah,
it can feel very raw to people. I've had to guard myself with some of the conversations with customers, for example, when I'm first starting out, making sure that my approach fits the company. You know, is it on brand to talk about things this openly,
yeah,
or do I need to take that back a step? Mm. You know, it is not because it's not about honesty as much as, is it too much noise? Is it, you know, is it something that is going to scare somebody if you give them the raw details about why something won't work?
Mm.
Do we need to prepare things? Is the company culture more to take something away? So I think it can get, you've got to be careful you don't run away with it.
Yeah.
It's very freeing and it is very addicting. So I would say the ultimate thing of that is work in the open. That's what I'm trying to achieve.
Okay.
But not everywhere is going to enable that. There are doors that are closed for a reason. You've got to understand those as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. And talking about your learning, and a lot of it sounds like it's come from being on the job and learning by experience, but in your opinion, is there anything that people can do if they notice an area that they might struggle with? And I think certainly in the tech world, like I say, it feels like certain point people go down a little bit of a fork in the road. Some people like to stay down the technical route, some people like to go into the people leadership route. Some of the better technical people often get promoted into those positions where they're not necessarily most comfortable, because actually, I'm not casting dispersions on techies here, but obviously a lot of technology people sometimes they do struggle with that communication piece. Is there anything you think those people could do to improve their emotional intelligence and evolve their skills as a leader?
Yeah, and I think it comes down to, I'll probably come back to that loop again, but it's I think that self-awareness piece you pointed out was probably the first stepping stone.
Mm.
If you can start to invite feedback, so perhaps if you feel you've got some improvement to make, and everybody has, you know, if you can admit that again, admitting it's the first step. You're not perfect, whether you think you are or not. You know, it's not them. You know, it's. It probably is some of you, at least.
Mm.
You can make it easier for people to work with you,
yeah,
no matter what stage you're at. If you can admit that, that's a really good first step. You know, be self-aware that nobody is perfect, and everybody can improve those relationships. Okay. And then ask for feedback. It's really hard at first. It can be a big worry for people to do that for the first time. You know, especially if you only just met people, you know, it's very hard to do.
Yeah.
I try and do it as soon as I can when I join an organization. But again, it's preparing the organization. The organization might find it jarring, and they've got to be prepared for it. And you've got to feel comfortable that you're ready to receive that feedback. If you're not, you shouldn't ask. Because, you know, and you should also, you can give guidance on what sort of limitation you're looking for, ask questions that lead people to give you feedback on specific areas.
Yeah.
You can even point out where you know you're wrong,
if
having that feedback will make you feel bad.
Because
I know people have said, well, I don't want any feedback on this. I know I've got to improve it, but I find it really annoying when people point it out. Well, just ask for feedback in other areas, or point out that you already know there's improvement to be made.
Yeah.
And I think that's the first step. You can do this, you know, just create a Google form, you know, and just send that around to people if you don't want to do it in person. Give people a chance to write some things down.
Mm.
You probably have to invite for a while for constructive feedback. I think the first thing people will go to is they want to put all the nice things and all the great feedback they've got for you, but not the constructive stuff, not that you could do with improving this. And again, that's how we are as humans, right? We like to please first.
Very much so. Yeah, it reminds me actually of an exercise we did at my previous company. Have you ever been part of sort of 360 feedback appraisals, where you know you're getting it from not only the people that you leads, but also peer level, and then from top down as well. Have you ever been part of these?
Yeah, oh yeah, very much.
How did you find them?
I think it once you get to the honesty, I think, again, like we were saying earlier in my career, I think I had a bit more of an ego about what I was doing.
Mm.
I was quite fragile about, you know, any sort of criticism I thought.
Yeah.
You know, looking over my shoulder, wondering if I was going to get pulled into a review with HR. Yeah. I think that's the thing. It's as soon as you understand that criticism doesn't mean you're doing your job wrong.
Mm.
It's just that there is a way to be even better.
Yeah.
And as soon as you can get that, I think it's easy.
Yeah.
And then the next thing is, like I say, is just getting people past the nice stage.
Yes.
Getting them into honesty.
Yeah. If you were going to advocate that a company implements those, would you advise doing them anonymously, or do you think it's good to know where the feedback has come from in terms of which particular person?
You've got to make a judgment on the culture, I think, and again, the maturity of people, how confident you think they'll be.
Yeah.
I've done it before with anonymous feedback because people didn't feel comfortable putting the name to it.
Mm.
But I've encouraged them, like, as soon as you can, you know, get that down. What I would say is to them, I said, even if you're going to do anonymous feedback, would you be comfortable that person finding out if that leaked?
Yeah.
You know, because it might, someone might work out who that is. Would you be comfortable with them reading that feedback?
Mm.
And if the answer is no, you've written it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, because people can be very brutal.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only thing is, I'd say, is delivering constructive feedback needs to be kind still.
Mm.
You know, you can tell somebody they've got room to improve without destroying them.
Yeah.
You shouldn't. It shouldn't feel like a weapon.
Mm. Like I said, constructive, I guess, isn't
exactly
it?
Exactly that. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, you've got to be kind with the way you share it. And I don't know if you read Radical Candor. That's a really interesting book. If you know, for anybody who's trying to understand how to give feedback,
yeah,
that's a really interesting book. It's
okay.
There's three states they talk about. They talk about brutal honesty, which is obviously, you know, very cruel at times, and it's too much. And ruinous empathy, I think, is the other one. I'll double check myself on that, but I could be wrong. But I think it's they call it ruinous empathy, which is pretty much you are over empathizing, like a false filter on what you're sharing with somebody.
Okay.
And you're not giving people really the true picture. So radical candor is the sweet spot in the middle.
Well, I shall take a look. What would you say was your biggest challenge that you faced as a leader thus far, and how did you go about overcoming that?
That's a very good question and a very difficult one to answer.
Take your time.
I'm not sure I can come up with the biggest because they're all so different, but there's I could pick a couple of examples of ones I can think were challenging. I find the personal ones the hardest. So where there's a conflict between the business and a person.
Okay.
I think that's the really hard thing. When you've got, when the business needs something different than that person needs,
yeah,
that's often very, very difficult.
Okay.
Especially if that person can't change.
Mm.
They're the most difficult to me. And again, I think all those things we talked about so far have become super important, especially empathy.
Yeah.
You know, you need to understand that if you're sharing a message that might be difficult, if it's affecting somebody's performance, if it's affecting their career at the organisation, that's going to be personal to them no matter what you say.
Yeah.
And when people say this isn't personal, those words should not be used too readily. It often is very personal to them.
It feels that way.
If it's affecting their life, if it's affecting their livelihood, then it's a big deal. But again, you've got to give people time to align. I don't like hard milestones for discovery. So I think the biggest thing I'd do when I've got a problem like that to share with somebody is I try to make it as visible as early. Right. And I'll lead up to a deadline or a milestone that we have. And that milestone or deadline, nothing new should be shared.
Right.
You know, there shouldn't be anything unexpected. You can't always avoid it, but that should be the thing you absolutely want to avoid, is that the shock news at those points.
Yeah.
You know, everything you've done should have been to share that news beforehand and give people a clear picture.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And I suppose there's nothing, it's not necessarily a bad thing as well. I think going back to the point you're making earlier about honesty and being authentic, that, you know, sometimes if there is a bit of a deviation between where the business is and actually where the person is and what they need, then sometimes it's not a bad thing to sort of stand in that honest space and say, well, look, we've tried everything we can, and you know, you've got to know where that line lies, I guess, haven't you, in terms of whether you continue going down the route where you know, as long as you've tried everything and you feel that you've been really open and honest with everybody, you have to go separate ways.
Absolutely. I mean, and you've got very many outcomes for that as well. Managers need to realise that they might start in a position of control with one of those things. It can very quickly go out of your control. Yeah. You know, the employee might not like the way it's going. So sometimes the outcome is, you know, like I was saying, so sometimes it's in the employee's hands, and they will choose to go a different direction with it. You know, they might not like the process. They'll go and do their own thing. I've had it a number of times when we've gone through situations like that, yeah, to align on how we can improve. They decide to go for another job, and that managers need to be aware. Mm. You know, there are many opportunities out there for people.
Yeah.
So be as kind as you can, because they might not be with you, and who knows, they might be working for your competitor or your customer or somebody else going forwards, and you want to have built a good relationship there.
Yeah, definitely.
I think kind to people.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think also, you know, obviously managers, you're still human as well, and it hurts when somebody does move on from the business, you know. But I think often if you can say, I've genuinely given it everything I possibly could, and you feel that you've really treated that person with, you know, utmost honesty and authenticity, and you know, really put everything in to give it the opportunity to work, and it's not worked, then I think everybody can kind of walk away a little bit more with a head held high, knowing that they've given it a really strong crack of the whip.
That's it. And if you give people time to change, many people will.
Yeah.
You know, you could do these things very late, and there's no time to improve.
Mm.
Or you could give people direction early, and they'll come back from it stronger than ever, and with better skills.
Yeah.
And again, self-awareness.
Yeah.
You know, keep coming back to that.
Yeah, no, it's the core theme. It should be the title of the podcast.
You definitely, you've underlined something for me there, I think. Yeah. That's a good one.
Good to know. So you're talking about the skills there of the people that you employ. And it's one of the things I'm always really interested when I consult with my clients on. You know, what is it they are looking for in a candidate, and what do they assess as a good candidate? Obviously, in the world of tech, so many different variables and parameters, because there's so many different niches and verticals that you can recruit in, and you know, the skill set obviously of a full stack engineer is going to be very different to the skill set of a DBA, for instance. But certain managers that I think get it really right in their team, of course they need certain skills, of course they need people that can do the job, but they often, I feel, are a little bit more lenient and flexible around the specifics of the technology, but actually more recruit for a core thread of characteristics about the person, you know, more so than just the CV of, are they ticking this particular tech, and you know, box checking exercise. So are there any particular traits and characteristics that you look for when you're employing anybody to come and join your team, as a general rule of thumb?
I'm looking for somebody who wants to learn. You know, I think learning is a big piece. You know, are you coming in because you think you know it all and you want to share that skill? Great, that's really good that you've got those and you're bringing something with you. But I also want to know that you can move on as well and change and grow. I'm hoping you'll be with us for a while. You know, I'm hoping that you'll become part of the business and want to drive things along for many years to come. With that in mind, I want somebody who can grow new skills as they go as well. Mm. And a lot of that, they don't have to bring particular skill set of doing that. We can share that, but they have to have that hunger to want to learn things new.
Sure.
And obviously, I'll provide them the time to do that while they're working. But
that's really refreshing.
It's got to be a hunger to learn. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
I don't just want to put somebody to work with the skills they've got.
Yeah.
That's a dead end.
That's really refreshing to hear, and I agree with you. I think it is definitely a mindset that I see in a lot of very good candidates. Is that irrespective of how fantastic and qualified they are on paper, they still have a real desire to continue to grow and develop. But it's often a bit of a catch 22, really, kind of a bit of a dichotomy when you're recruiting for a client, because very often they want the finished article, you know, and not prepared to get somebody that I always see it as it should be a bit of a win-win. You know, you should be getting a great candidate that's going to add a lot of value, but the candidate should also, it should make sense for them to move in terms of where they're going to develop and what they're going to get for their next step of their career. But it doesn't always, you know, translate like that. A lot of clients often look for that finished article. They're not prepared to give somebody the chance to step into the role. So yeah, how do you sort of balance that?
I think that again depends on the business. I've been in different businesses where we've got more, I think certainly bigger businesses, what you've got more room to be more flexible.
Yeah.
So you can be much more inclusive with the skill set you're looking for, with the sort of people and the background that you're trying to bring in. Obviously, you've got to be inclusive in terms of, you know, what everyone brings, but in terms of skill set as well, you know, you can be more flexible and more inclusive for that as well. You know, want to make sure everybody feels they've got, you know, they can comfortably work in a place. You want to make sure that everyone knows that there's equality, there's equity there.
Yeah.
But you also need to be able to be clear on what the skill set required is. What skills do they need to bring?
Mm.
In some places, especially in smaller companies, you probably need a bit more from them, especially if you're up against deadlines. You haven't got time to train them upon lots of things. There might be some core skills, but there is probably a long list on that job description and not all of it is needed. So I want to try and get that really finessed, should we say, to get only what's needed, being in the you need this.
Yeah,
and I think that's another thing with inclusive hiring, actually. If you get that right, that's more inclusive. There are people who will only apply to jobs if they tick everything in that needed box. Mm. There are others who will apply if they have 3 out of 10.
Yeah.
You know, they will just, you know, spam their CV to anything that remotely hits.
Yeah.
So you're already, you know, discriminating against people who don't have that.
Absolutely.
Be real. You know, that list should be genuine. If it says required, that is a requirement, and you must make sure all candidates have that.
Yeah.
If that's not the case and you can be flexible, you've got to drop those to a nice to have.
Yeah.
You know, underneath. They can be things you are looking for, but not essentials for the role.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I see a lot of role profiles and job specs on a daily basis, and I see it as my job, obviously, to consult with the client if I feel that, and I often get it, you know, why they're putting it on the profile, but if it's actually going to decrease their chances of getting the candidates they're looking for, then obviously I see it as my job to obviously consult with them around that, and not making it purely a, there's obviously lots of different variables and parameters at play when we're talking about, you know, how people feel about their qualifications for a job, but it is a fairly robust finding, I think, in the gender balance between men and women, and especially in the world of tech. Obviously, a lot of companies trying to do whatever they can to really even that balance up, you know, in terms of the gender divide, that it is well known that a lot of women often won't apply to a job ad if there are things on there that they're not qualified for. You know, whereas I think guys, it's known, again, historically, are a lot more you know, open just applying to it anyway, so, you know, it kind of shoots.
And I think it's a confidence thing, so I think it probably applies to a number of marginalised groups.
Yeah.
You know, just if you're not confident, and if you feel like you're being discriminated against generally by an industry, you're probably less likely to be confident and say, yeah, I know those things, or I know enough to apply.
Yeah.
So I think it's more important that you have those things right, and I think you made a very good point there. It works for recruiters and for businesses. If they're inclusive, they'll get more and better candidates.
Yes.
You know, be honest about what you need.
Yeah, absolutely that. So we've spoken a bit about leadership, and I mentioned a bit earlier on that there's this sort of quite classic fork in the road that often happens, where technologists either choose to stay down that sort of principal route and being ICs and sort of continuing to hone their craft as a coding or an engineer focused professional, and then there's people that potentially move more into that people management pastoral kind of route. You mentioned earlier that it sort of piqued your interest when you had your first taste of management, but was that a clear-cut route for you from that moment on that you were going to stay down that path, or did you ever think about moving back towards the technical side? How did you feel about that?
Yeah, good question. It's I've tried to try and keep a hand in both. I think it helps with the empathy piece. So I think if you can keep coming back to tech, it stays fresh in your mind that, you know, this is what your team are going through on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
So I've looked for roles where I can exercise both. So where I can be useful in being technical, I try not to take a technical lead. Mm-hmm. I leave that to my engineers, and sometimes I'll put myself in shoes. I'll say, look, treat me like a junior for this. I want to understand how that works. Can you show me how that works? Can I help out with this? Can I pair? But from a technical perspective, I'm a junior engineer. I know nothing. Don't feel that I'm going to guide you in this, because this is something I don't know a lot about. I don't want to influence you. And again, I want that to be, that should still be kind. you know, it's not a case of, you know, you're ignoring somebody because they're in a more junior position. But I also don't want them to think that I have confidence in that position I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm putting myself in, again, in a vulnerable state, one where I'm learning. I enjoy that state. I don't have an ego about, you know, not being in control in that situation. And they should feel safe that can happen as well.
Yeah.
If they're not comfortable in that, it's not going to work.
Mm.
So, again, you have to cultivate that relationship. But if you can do that, that's a really useful place to be, because you can experience some filter of what they're going through.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not arrogant enough to think that, you know, I am experiencing everything they experience, every stress they experience. Not at all.
Mm.
I'm a tourist. I'm dipping into it.
Yeah.
But it's really useful to just get a flavour of what they're going through when they're trying to take this stuff on.
Yeah.
And what it's like to learn that new way of working, or that technology. Mm. What it's like to just try and put this stuff together and get it into a state where it's ready for production.
Yes.
Ready for customers to use. It's resilient. It's secure. And that we can be proud of what goes out.
Mm, absolutely.
You know, it gives me a little bit of an inkling into what they're going through.
Yeah.
Because, again, we talked about managers who make assumptions. It's very easy to get away from it and think, oh, this is simple. This should take me mere minutes. You know, I would have done that in 15 minutes if I was an engineer back then.
Yeah.
But, you know, things have moved on. It's a different technology. It's a different way of working. There are different concerns out there.
Yeah.
You know, when I started my career, you know, security wasn't as big a concern as it was. We weren't expected to get involved with the operational side as much as engineers. There are many different things now that I have to remind myself, it's a different landscape.
Yeah.
AI being here, I've said before, I promised I wouldn't talk about AI just loosely, but is a specific one. So AI is another paradigm that's shifting the way we work.
Yeah.
That's changing things for engineers. So there's all these things going on, all these changes, and I think there's more to learn. There's a broader landscape than ever. Even if you specialize in back end, front end, if you want to be full stack, whatever you pick there, there's still a massive spread. Even just trying to learn ways of working and to learn all the operational things you need to do and the people you need to connect into, there's a lot of stuff just to get that stuff out there.
Yeah.
So you have to try and cut out as much noise as you can. What does that feel like for them?
Mm-hmm.
So the only way I can find that out is to try and get back to being them for a little while.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a flavour of that.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm confident that you get respect by giving respect, and I think people would really respect that about you, that you actually try and get into that state where you can empathise, and you know, a lot of leaders wouldn't do that. But I totally agree with you. I think, you know, just in my 15 years of doing recruitment, okay, which is quite a long time in terms of recruitment, like dog years, not recruitment years, but but obviously, you know, not that long in the grand scheme of things. But it's a fundamentally different place today. The landscape of technology, you know, of where we were 15 years ago, of a junior developer entering into the world of work, and where we are today, like say with the rise of AI and LLMs and all of that. And how do you foresee that's had to, do you feel there's certain skill sets that junior developers entering into the world of work today have to hone a lot quicker potentially than they would have done back in the day? And I suppose, yeah, vice versa. How do you kind of see the skills landscape sort of evolving off the back of the fact it is a you know, fundamentally different place today?
I don't know. I mean, I'd say if you've got somebody who comes in as junior, that it's your responsibility taking them on to understand what their gaps are, because they won't know themselves. I think if you bring a junior on, they shouldn't be expected to be self-aware. Yeah. They should be interviewing in a state where you are making that decision about what they're ready for. Whereas if you get somebody who's mid-level or above, I'd expect them to understand what they're coming into, yeah, and to know, you know, once we describe it, once we share openly what the job is, whether they can do it or not. So yeah, I put a bit more responsibility onto them for you know, they're an equal partner,
yeah,
in coming into that business, I think, then. So it's both of you. Whereas with junior, I think a lot of the responsibility is on the business to know if they are ready for it, yes, for the job. They shouldn't be expected to assess that.
Yeah.
So you've got a duty of care, I think, to bring that person in and to bring them on with the skills they need. I think what maybe isn't disclosed enough with juniors is the expectations about how they're going to work. And I think there could be more done in interviews to describe the ways of working of a business, because every business, yeah, is different.
Totally agree.
So I think there are expectations that they'll be maybe better communicators than we were when we first started. That, you know, yeah, their communications are more important. They'll certainly, if they don't know them, have to learn those skills. Business agility, you know, the way you break up work. There's a lot of businesses assume you know that stuff first. Again, if I've got a junior, I'm not going to assume they know that. And even somebody who's mid or senior, you know, you'll be trying to take them through their career and find out if they've had that experience.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily going to put you off employing them, but getting honest answers, you know, you know whether that's going to be a fit, whether those skills can be learnt on the job,
yeah,
whether that's something you can do. And again, we talked about, you know, what's essential and what's optional.
Yeah.
Hopefully you've got a very short list of what's essential. You're assessing those and making sure they've got those. Any of the optional ones, they're a case of like, okay, this is not putting me off this person, it's just I know that we'll have to do X, Y, and Z, and
yeah,
you know, is that going to be achievable in you know, our business,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and how we do that.
Absolutely.
So I don't think there's a specific set, but I think there are a lot of stresses that impact people in a modern business,
yeah,
and that you need to think about.
Mm.
For me, one of the biggest pieces is expectation around where you'll be working, flexibility,
yeah,
and that's, again, that's a conversation in every business,
yeah,
especially now since we've all come back from COVID.
Yeah.
Where will we be working in terms of, is it remote, is it hybrid, what does hybrid mean?
Yeah,
you know, you have all these different phrases. That must be a minefield for you as a recruiter.
It is, yeah, and yeah, you're dead right. Obviously, you've got to be really specific within that, because it's very subjective. I mean, hybrid means very different things to different people, and we've had, you know, unfortunately seen a number of instances where it's obviously a very ambiguous kind of ever-evolving landscape at the moment, I suppose, of what is the new normal for lots of companies. Maybe they thought a year ago it was this, and actually now it's changed to this, and we've seen a lot of companies that have started out with one policy and slowly morphed into a different policy, maybe a little, the same, a little bit more traditional policy, back to kind of where we were, and a lot of their personnel suffered as a result and sort of maybe moved on. Absolutely, but I really love the point that you made a minute ago. I think similar lines of around the interview process and just how historically, you know, there's always been this, I think, a relatively false assumption that the interview process is, you know, to put the company up on this sort of pedestal and, you know, make the candidate feel like they've really had to work to get this position, and, you know, it's that kind of psychology. And I think there's an element of that obviously a candidate feels like they'd like to deserve the position that they've been offered. But in the same breath, I totally believe in this day and age that the interview process should be all about being 100% authentic, 100% genuine, and like you said, to really demonstrate to somebody as best as you possibly can prior to them actually starting the job what it's like to work at that company. You know, for the candidate and the client to make that sort of fully informed decision whether it's the right fit for them, because there's nothing more, and we've all seen it happen, but there's nothing more dangerous than this is what you're going to get, picture A, and then you walk through the door and it's picture B, and the companies, I think, that get it really right are the ones where there's minimal difference between those two pictures, whereas, you know, very often there's a big difference between those pictures, and it doesn't really do anybody any good to, you know, sort of chase a rabbit down a hole when fundamentally, you know, 6 months down the line that person's probably going to leave anyway because they missold the opportunity, or maybe they're not even right for the role because, you know, they were hired under the wrong false pretenses. So I totally agree with you there. I think it is all about openness and transparency in the world that we live in now, and if it's not the right fit, that's okay too. You know, you'd rather know now than in 6 months time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. Just try and make it clear to people what sort of business you are. I mean, my preference is to have an interview that feels like a conversation.
Yeah.
By that I don't mean that you skip all the rules and you make everything different and it's not something that's the same for everybody. It's got to be fair.
Yeah.
But it should also feel that there's space that they can ask question things. Sorry. They should also feel they can ask you questions as a business as well.
Yeah.
They're interviewing you at the same time. If you can make an interview feel, you know, reciprocal, I think you've cracked it because then that people feel that they can say what they want to say, they can feel they can be honest. And I think, again, you'll be more inclusive for different groups.
Yeah.
There are people who won't perform well on an interview where you've got to put that business on a pedestal. They just won't be able to do it. You know, anybody who's neurodiverse, you know, may have trouble with not being honest, you know, and they may say things that damage the ego of the people in that room, or the you know, the ego they have around the business.
Yeah.
They should really get over that, I think, as a business. You know, you should be able to take honest feedback from people. You should be able to take it when people aren't able to articulate what they really want to say.
Mm.
They may struggle with that, but be brilliant employees.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be inclusive.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. Well, Martin, I think it's been a fantastic chat. Really enjoyed speaking to you. I like to end every podcast with the same question. If you'd be so kind to indulge me with what has been your favourite piece of advice that you've ever received throughout your career? So any particular advice that you would pass on to your human fellow kind, what would that be for you?
I think the best piece of advice I was given was one of my first line managers who said that the more experience he got, the more he realised he knew nothing at all. And I'm sure there's some big quotes there.
Absolutely.
I think you'll probably come into that, but that stuck with me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ones I could articulate around that. But
great
advice. You don't know everything.
Yeah.
And I think that is the biggest thing to take away, and that's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay not to know. It's okay to be wrong.
That sounds like that might have been where that self-awareness seed was first planted.
You've done well there. It's definitely it is, hasn't it? Yeah, I think so. I think to go back to what you said about self-awareness, that's a big piece. But I think there's comfort in it as well. It's not just about being vulnerable and about being aware of your faults. There's also comfort that, you know, I don't actually have to be right all the time.
Yeah.
A culture of being able to fail is really important. If I can experiment and I can get things wrong and I'm safe in the way I do that, if my boss has got my back when I get something wrong, if we can work in a way that can go wrong and it's not near production, it's not near customers, you know, we can have some misses as well as hits, then great. You know, that's a great way to work.
Absolutely. Yeah, lovely way to end things. So nothing remains but to say thank you very much for coming on, being such a fantastic guest. And I'd be honoured to be in your team and be led by you with your great emotional intelligence.
Thanks for inviting me. Some brilliant points. I think I've taken a few things. I've learned coming here. You've given me some things to take away as well. So
good to
hear. Thanks very much, Kai. Nice to chat.
Lovely to see you. Take care.
Bye.